cliffcentral.com.
Look at this man. What a sight for sore eyes. I don't need to do any fancy introductions. Anybody? Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. You almost fell off the chair. I don't need to do any fancy introductions for this man. He is Bob Mabena. He is well known to all South Africans. Hey, how's the new job going, man?
It's going good. It's going good. It's really fantastic. It's very stressful, but I'm loving it.
Back in management.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Really?
It's, you know what? If I was managing, back to managing a mine or something like that, yeah. You know,
no, sure.
I've changed nappies before and it's okay. It's okay.
Listen, I see you wearing your sundowns. This is something we have in common. Well, there are a lot of things we have in common. Last time I saw you, you and Tim Modise and I,
yes,
were on the cover of Destiny magazine.
Indeed,
we did a very nice shoot, and it was nice to sit and talk to you for a while. I did bump into you subsequently, and we had a long discussion about the PAC. Do you remember that?
Yes, we did. Yes,
because
we did.
This is something you've been researching for a while.
We'll
talk about that just now too, because that I think is a lot more interesting. People know you've got thousands of awards; they know which radio stations and TV channels you've been on. And I mean, listen, not to in any way breeze past all of that. Tremendous achievements.
Thank you.
You're probably, in radio terms, you're about as blue-blooded as they get, right? I mean, there isn't a property in radio, there isn't a media business that you haven't been involved in at some
point.
There is,
and I'm happy about it. Kaizo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm okay with that.
You don't want to go there.
No, I'm good with that.
But a lot of people are very confused by why you decided to make a move back into management.
Yeah.
And certainly the group that you're going into now is an exciting one. There are very few exciting things in radio at the moment.
Yes, indeed.
This is one of them.
Very few.
But Capricorn FM is an interesting station. They've seen massive growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Limpopo.
Yes.
Yeah. And Beat, and what's the other one that you've got?
One EC.
And then Power.
In the Western Cape. And then Power 98.7.
All right.
Yes.
Now, these are given Curry's businesses.
Yes, he's the chairman.
Smart man, huh?
Oh, man. He amazes me every day. He's really quite incredible. I mean, I've known this guy. I gave him his first break on radio, and I've known him all this time, probably about 25 years. And every day he surprises me. I mean, I find myself tooting my wife like, this guy is
so smart. Yeah,
absolutely.
Remember when we had Given in here, Mubs?
Yes, I do.
Very impressive man. And he's so friendly and down to earth and normal.
Yeah. Mostly, you know, guys that are raised by their mothers and grandmothers are like that. You know, very approachable, amenable, sometimes self-effacing, but good guys, basically.
Now, you don't sound any different than you did in the Radio Bop days. You sound as fresh as ever. And waking up at this time in the morning, that's not meant to happen. You're meant to start sounding terrible.
Look, you have enough sex, you wake up like this. It works.
Says the man. You're a very fertile man. Let me congratulate you. Seven children.
That I know of.
That's it. Oh, we love you. Who doesn't love that? Now, what is for you the joy in going into management here? I mean, having been on air, that's exciting. Every day you get to do something different. You get to meet really cool people, like, you know, I get to see you this morning, and you get to steer your own ship. When you're managing, Rena, who works with me, said it's like herding cats when you're managing talent.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, changing diapers, you know.
Why do you put yourself through this? I mean, haven't you got seven kids already? You need to keep changing diapers? What are you, on a
loop? I've changed their diapers so well that they're okay now. They changed their own diapers.
Are you a sadist?
It's, you know, more than anything, I enjoy coaching radio. It's so ingrained in me that if I don't give off what I know about radio, there's an itch. I mean, every 6 months or so, I have free radio workshops. The last one I had, I think it's about 2 months ago, at the Grace Bible Church.
Please, can you stop with this radio stuff? You're filling people with hopes and dreams, and then they're not going to get jobs.
I know. I know.
When are they going to work?
I'm trying to push most of them into sales. Remember Jenny Critchfield?
Yes.
I'm now working with Jenny Critchfield.
Okay,
you know,
she's cool.
In coaching, you know, it, from a sales point of view.
Yeah.
But therein lies an opportunity. I mean, imagine with this digital migration happening with the SABC, how many DAB radio stations. Yeah, it's going to happen. I think with Ayanda Jojo, we have someone in there who will make sure
it
that things
happen. Certainly wasn't going to happen under faith.
No. There was no faith there. She couldn't move mountains.
But, okay, so you love radio. It's in your blood. You can't. That's something you were born to do, and it's something that was
absolutely
even though you did television and everything else, like me, radio is the thing. You
hated television.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Couldn't wait to get that
out
of there.
Yeah.
It was silly. It's a stupid
No.
There's no imagination involved.
Zero.
Yeah. So radio is exciting, but the format, the medium itself, the distribution, the means of distribution has changed completely, right?
And it had to.
So what hope is there for conventional, traditional radio? And I'm not asking this because I have an answer.
Sure.
I don't know. I decided to get out of there. You've decided to put even more work into it, not for yourself, but for other people.
Yeah.
It's a curious move.
Look, I mean, I think if you juxtapose what's happening in developed countries and what's happening in developing countries and underdeveloped countries, radio works differently in all these areas. Mm-hmm. We are somewhere in the middle where what you've done now, the timing was perfect, and it's great because it gets conventional radio on its feet to start thinking creatively.
They're not thinking creatively. They're just copying me. They're all podcasting, and they're doing visual content. And
look,
all this
I have
stuff.
Just posted
those
right
assholes
now.
Assholes at Prime Media.
On Instagram, I've just posted now a question, and I've said it's one thing to diligently post throughout the day on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's another to truly connect with the audience you're trying to reach socially. Which radio station actually interacts with you best? You know, radio hasn't embraced new technology at all. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, its very own strength. When TV came, it was, even a song, Video Killed the Radio Star, came up, it was like the death of radio. But invariably, radio has always managed to be on the back burner of new technology.
But that's
this time.
The innovation is happening. I mean,
exactly.
Let's just take something back for radio. You and I are both, we're superheroes on this side of radio, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're soldiers for radio. Let's
absolutely.
Okay, so radio invented reality TV.
Yes. Yes.
We used to have marriage proposals, The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have singing competitions, Idols.
Yep.
We used to have a bunch of people in the studio who would interact with each other every day in close confined quarters, Big Brother. Mm-hmm. We invented reality TV long before TV thought of it. Well, then radio became complacent, and it was all about these guys who do the time and the temperature and tell you what the song was that you just
played,
as if you don't have Shazam.
Look, we had...
Well, back then.
I don't remember back and I mean, I'm back on air now on Saturdays, and I don't back and announce songs. Yeah. And every time people tweet me like, what's the name of that song?
Do you do the time?
One word, Shazam.
Do you do the time?
People don't care about time on Saturdays, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
But even in the week, because, what we're doing is podcasting, when they could be listening to it at 9 o'clock at night. What does it help me to tell them it's 8:30?
Yeah.
And furthermore, the one thing you carry around with you all the time has got the time right there in front and center, all over the screen, 8:30.
Indeed, and the replica tag holes you can buy at the Orange Soul Plaza.
Thank you very much.
You're right there.
Any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So what kind of future does music radio have, in your opinion?
Music radio goes with personality. And I think for as long as there's that personality, whether they're podcasting or whatever it is they're doing, it'll always need that personal touch. It's just that radio hasn't done it as well as it's done. And whether that trend can be reversed, I don't know. Jury's out on that. We've damaged radio quite a bit with the Australian consultants. Are you listening, Gracie? It's really been that bad.
Shots.
It's been that bad. I mean, these guys, I tell them about some of the stuff that, these consultants used to say, like, you cannot, a separation rule for a music compiler, you cannot have two female songs back to back.
Oh, please.
What are you talking about?
Listen, they didn't, when we were trying new stuff, they didn't understand.
Yeah.
They come in here and they think, oh, South Africans like this and they don't like that.
And the money we paid them.
How do you know? Did we pay them a lot?
Sheesh. We paid them a lot of money. I mean, when Gracie came through, it was my way or I don't sign. And so he had to be given full powers to do this. And what the hell is that?
And a ton of cash.
Lots.
All right. I don't want to talk about this. It's going to get me cross. Let's talk about you.
Yeah.
Because you've mentioned personality is the key to good radio. You have a big personality. You have a fascinating life. You have these kids, and I've met a few of your kids.
Yes.
Half of them, which is about 20. And they all have a bit of your personality.
Unfortunately, yes.
No. I think it's very fortunate. Listen, you're a really, really powerful, charismatic interesting dude, even when you're being very serious. And you're not serious a lot, but when I sat down and spoke with you the last time, you started telling me about Robert Sobukwe and the origins of the PAC. And then you started telling me about how the PAC has suffered and what has happened to them while the ANC has been claiming history as their own.
Indeed.
And I was blown away by this. First of all, because I didn't know about it. I don't think many people know about it. The books have not been written, and if they have, they certainly haven't been read by as many people as have read Long Walk to Freedom.
Yeah.
So how did you get interested in that? And are you still busy writing things?
Yeah, my daughter and I are going through something. My eldest daughter are going through something right now, very personal. I'm writing a journal. And I'm also writing a journal about my days at MSG. Oh, wow. And, when I started thinking about where I grew up, because sometimes you can have such trauma when you're first growing up that you forget certain things. And I remember talking to my uncle about his friendship with...
from Attridgeville?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay. He used to be friends and they used to be in Azapo with a former minister, Nwako Ramatlodi.
I remember.
And I reminded him, like, you know what? Do you remember you used to be with... And all of a sudden, these memories started coming back to me about the activism, about how in Pretoria, with guys like Jeff Masemola, the PAC was the strongest party ever, and the ANC was just an also-ran at that time. And then I started delving deeper into, you know, what actually happened? You know, and I can safely say that this is probably the same thing that happened to the UDF. You know, where people with common interests of preserving this wonderful country that we have were decimated by people who had more ambition than anything else. But at that time, because we had a common enemy, you couldn't see the undercurrents of what the others were doing and where they were heading. Right. That, you know, they were smarter. The ANC was much smarter. You know, this intellectualism thing that now with the Zuma regime is being shunned by the ANC has been who they've been. You know,
yeah.
They've been very smart guys. I mean, even the chief thing, you know, how they call each other chief, it's based on the fact that these were people who had money. They were actual chiefs, yeah. You know. So, you know, the PAC guys were very...
Is that why traditional leadership is still given such a priority?
Indeed, okay. Indeed. And also because they were given, you know, some kind of refuge, you know. For instance, Sobuza, King Sobuza.
King Sobuza.
Used to donate cows to the ANC and fund them, you know. Obviously, you know, with 1.2 million people living in your country and the mighty P.W. Botha coming through the border, there's nothing you can really do.
Yeah.
All you can do is just, you know, sell a few cows and give money to the ANC. So they were very close to some kind of oligarchy anyway, the ANC. So
But in Attridgeville, at that time, so you're a young man in Attridgeville, you're enmeshed in these stories. Obviously, things are changing very slowly at that point, but they start to change fast afterwards.
Yeah.
But what are the PAC just subsumed into the ANC? Is it like when an amoeba comes and it closes around something and just takes it in?
Remember one thing, and this is one thing that we forget, is that there was common agreement who the enemy was. And once the enemy was defeated, everybody scatters, like, oh, we're okay now, so we're cool. Those who wanted to defeat the enemy suddenly find themselves with no... I mean, every hero needs a villain. Yeah. Kind of thing, yeah, you know. Yeah. Without Batman, there wouldn't be the Joker.
Sure.
You know, well, I don't know about Robin either, but you know, it's that sort of thing where a lot of the PAC guys who were very organic about who the enemy was and how the enemy was going to be defeated, once the enemy was gone, those who knew what to do afterwards, the smart ones, the chiefs, took over. And the ANC guys were like, oh, shit.
Are there still PAC people in jail?
Yes, yes, there are. There are. You know, there are. But, you know,
you see it from
guys
time
like
Mukhadla,
from time to time, they raise their hairs. But when you're not with this... There's something fleshy to be said about who you follow these days, be it on radio or in fashion. And the PAC is not fleshy. Yeah. They're very organic people who may not appeal to what appeals to a lot of people today. And someone needs to sit them down and say, guys, there needs to be something cool about you.
But if you go back to Sobukwe, where these guys were in so many ways a better intellectual alternative, right?
Indeed. Indeed.
There was stuff that man, who was treated worse than any of our political prisoners, many will, not the ones who were killed, obviously, but in terms of the people who went to Robben Island or the people who were put into exile, This man suffered probably the most because he was deprived of any company whatsoever.
He was South Africa's, apartheid South Africa's enemy number one, more dangerous than Nelson Mandela other prisoner, so to speak. Right. But, you know, this is what you do. You really, when you really want to subvert and oppress people, you go for the most dangerous guy and you kill them. I mean, think about what happened to Jimmy Hoffa in the U.S. with the unions, you know. I mean, after Hoffa, it looked like all the unions had died in the U.S., you know. They still haven't found his...
They still haven't found him, yeah.
I should laugh. But, you know...
They still know. I mean, he could be right under this desk right now.
He could be in Saxon World.
He could. Now, what about you growing up? I mean, what kind of a life did you have in Attridgeville? What sort of parents? What sort of family?
I'll start in the middle and kind of go all over the place. I discovered a friendship with my dad who did the thing of taking off when I was 35.
Okay.
And
you reconnected with
reconnected. And it was fantastic. You know, sometimes when you sit down, you get sober about the cards that life has dealt you. You're less bitter, you know, and you kind of understand, okay, this guy took off because of this and that and the other. And I had to actually force the truth out of him. Like, dude, really? I mean,
level
I'm 35.
Treat me with some respect.
Why did you leave, you know? And when he told me the story and he told me to go to certain people who could corroborate his story, and I did indeed. I mean, you can't call him bluff, you know what I mean? And they confirmed his story. It was heartbreaking to realize that, you know, there was the tribalism thing. He was a Shangan man and these were Ndebeles and they didn't want him around. But that's not the story I got from the Mabenas, you see. He was a Baloi and Mabenas is my mother's surname. And when I finally found the truth, you know, what do you do with such an albatross, you just let it go, you know, you just let it go.
But this is a thing that, and you know, Father's Day is coming up and you're a dad and I think there are a lot of people who hurt in South Africa when it comes to fathers.
Yeah.
And they hurt because their fathers didn't necessarily mean to be absent. In very many circumstances, they were moved around for work.
Yeah.
They had other families, like a secondary or a third family.
As one does.
And a lot of these men... They also weren't able to deal with their feelings about their children like we can today. It's much easier for men today to talk about these things. In those days, there wasn't the equipment, the tools to deal with this stuff, right? And we can't hold them responsible and hold a grudge for the rest of our lives.
But the conversation needs to happen, though.
Well, that conversation you had with your dad at 35.
It's very necessary. I mean, I buried the guy. You know, when he passed on, I mean, he was a stubborn Shangan man. He fell ill somewhere around the end of December in 1999. And he said to me, I will not die until 2010. I promise you at 1 o'clock in the morning on the 1st of January.
You're kidding.
He left. I laughed. I was like, this guy all the way to the end. It was incredible.
He predicted his own year of death.
Yeah, he
what a stubborn
man. He knew when to exit. You know, I mean, this is a guy who could. I mean, this guy left school at, I think it was standard 5. He taught himself Latin and he was a court interpreter. Wow. And he wrote books, you know. And he was incredible. He was really something else.
But for those first 35 years, you could have been resentful and bitter. And
I was.
You must have harbored quite a lot of anger towards him.
I did. But you know, something crazy happened. At about 25, so 10 years before the 35, my brother and I were hating together, you know, like, we don't like this guy, you know. Meanwhile, this guy was friends with my dad for that 10 years. He had been having a relationship. I think he had a hard time with, how am I going to go back to him and tell him, you know, because we were hating together. And what I found out, you know, I had to live with it. And, God, you sneaky little, you know, but it was cool.
And forgiveness, it feels better.
Man,
it feels so much better than holding all that anger and that negativity, right?
Absolutely. You let go. It's very cathartic, you know. It you feel free. You can fly.
And this mother of yours must have been some woman.
I found out as well. I mean, she died when I was 11. I did the numbers, and I found out that my dad was a Ben 10.
Oh! Hey, now.
Well.
And it kind of makes sense why their relationship was so volatile. I mean, it was one of those really Mr. and Mrs. Smith kind of relationships. They hated to love each other. And I think she was really miffed at the fact that she liked this young guy. And he had this bravado thing, this macho thing that, you know, I could bait a woman older than me, you know, who had gone to school, had gone further with school than I had, you know. So it was, that was one of those relationships I wish they were alive today to write that book. They went all the way to be ballroom champions in Pretoria as well, you know. And I can't dance to save my life. I have two left feet.
And did you become politically active?
Yes, I did. In high school, at Solridge High School, I became chairperson of the SRC. It was for the chicks, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I was one of those dweeby kids. To date, there are people in my neighborhood that still ask, which one were you? This is who don't believe me when I say I come from Atrisville, an area called Matevilin. They're like, nah, we never saw you. So, you know, to get out of my shell, I had to find a way to get the chicks. So I became chairperson of the SRC, and I saw guys like Stanley Nkosi's family get killed. You know, it was really sad. There was one time when we were put in prison in Atrisville, and I saw one of the guys in our SRC who was in, he didn't know that some of us had been incarcerated, and he was an informant. That's when I decided, that's it. I can't do this anymore. There's no one can trust.
And did you always want to be in some kind of communications business? Was that something that you realized you had a talent for?
Because no.
I mean, you've got the gift of the gab.
It was when I was coming out of my shell in Standard 8. That's grade 10, right? I mean, before then, nobody knew me. I didn't exist. I was one of those kids who could tuck themselves away very nicely. I knew how to hide. And also, I grew up an asthmatic, so I couldn't do any sports or anything like that. So when the chance to speak came, and this English teacher of mine, who was really fantastic, she was really something else, she's like, you know, you should really get into the debating committee. And when I did one, and she's like, you're the chairman, actually. And I became the chairman. And an embarrassing incident happened that I always like to talk about, just to remove the embarrassment from it. Kids were not coming to the debating societies to be the audience, because at that time it was 1984, remember, in townships was a mini 76.
Sure.
You know, so there was a lot of activism going on. And, you know, this English teacher of mine, Mrs. Mashiani, says, you got to find a way to get the kids in, put some entertainment in there. At that time, rap was becoming big, and LL Cool J had come up with an album, Bigger and Deffer, his first hip-hop album, and he had a song called I Need Love.
Right.
And I thought, well, I could perform this song. I had never, ever done anything like that before. So I went on stage as the chairperson, you know, called everybody to order, like, okay, fine, can you call the other kids who are going to rap now? And I started, you know, when I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall, and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. And before you know it, the crowd is going crazy. And I did the most stupid thing in the world. The girls were going crazy. So I started unbuttoning my shirt. Oh. So I buttoned my shirt, and I forgot that, you know, I had buttoned my sleeves as well. So I'm trying to get the shirt off.
But it stuck around.
That was a pivotal moment.
You were never meant to be a stripper.
No, that's not a talent I have.
Terrible stripper. Yeah. I've heard that from a number of women. But you do have, I mean, you have a love, and this is something which you embrace. A lot of men have a problem with being honest about it. You love, love, love women.
Absolutely.
You are attracted to many of them at various times.
Oh.
You can't help yourself. You're just a guy.
They're beautiful
who's
creatures.
Honest about it.
They're beautiful creatures.
Yeah.
They're really fantastic. I'm just really fortunate that in the past 5 years, I met one I could stick with. I was like, hey, I don't know if it's her or if it's the timing, you know, but everything else just fell into place. And I'm like, jeez.
But it's not lack of interest. I mean, you still get women who think that you are the sexiest thing alive, right? Even now, in your old age.
3 years shy of 50. I had a crazy incident where...
I mean, let me be fair about this. You're looking as good as ever.
Jeans.
Yeah, it's good jeans.
Good jeans. So nothing else.
Baloy Mabena combo.
Indeed.
Good.
No, I mean, I had this woman go to the Sunday World and say that I was a stingy... What? Blesser.
Oh.
Never met the woman.
How dare she?
I have a child
in the Northwest with some black girl.
It's crazy. This woman calls on air, I think last year, to apologize. Now, the guy controlling didn't warn me about this. This woman comes on and she apologizes quickly and drops the phone.
Oh my God.
I had so much to say to this woman.
You wanted to ask her if you were at least a considerate lover, maybe.
You know, I wanted her to come in and do it a little bit better in the studio.
Shoot the damn thing
and sell it.
She would have come in and done a little bit of a dance for you, wouldn't she? listen, I'm sorry about this, but Dave Levinson's standing outside and he wants to say something. Yes, Dave, what is it?
I was once making love to a girl, and Bob Mabena was on the radio, And Prince had been quite big in those days, because that's the last time I had sex with a beautiful girl. And he was on the radio and he said, that was Prince with sexy motherfucker. And then he said, oh my goodness, I'm in big trouble now.
I remember that. I remember my first trip to the UK.
And then I came.
That song was... I'm glad I helped.
You were the trigger.
I went to the UK and one of the things I wanted to do, because music then, there was no live streaming or anything like that. So You had to get the rare songs.
On
cassette. I was looking for... I love Prince. I love Prince.
Oh, I know.
And we didn't have that song. I mean, the album came to this country. I think it was Benji Moody at Tusk Records who imported this stuff, and it didn't have that song. And I bought it, and I thought, I can't not share this song with my audience. You know, I didn't warn the station manager or anything like that. And I had been one of those guys who never cost guck. You know what I mean? I just, you know, do your job, you know, honor the clock, and there's the Bible. You don't do this and the other. And I thought, just once. Just, and I played it. It was fantastic.
And you back announced it as sexy motherfucker.
I back announced it as sexy motherfucker, because
it's cool.
You know, men are not trash. This is how much this guy thought this woman was beautiful. Sexy motherfucker. That was cool.
You've worked with everyone. Pretty much everyone in radio.
Yeah. I've been honored to work with the best.
Who do you respect in radio?
Quite a few people. Rina, definitely. Stan, I, you know, I love working with Mavericks, because they're so unpredictable and they challenge you at any given moment. And Stan was that.
This is Stan Katz.
Stan Katz, yeah. I love Stan with all my heart.
A lot of people don't get on with him, but you do.
Because I get him. I mean, it's the same as working with Given Curry. You know, Given is not you can't really put him in a box. Mm-hmm. He's also a Maverick, and you've got to learn how to manage up. You know, and I think I do that very well. I mean, I've worked with really stupid people at the SIE GUC, you know, and I've prevailed.
You were on a bus for a while.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? What a horrible job that must have been for you.
But you know who made it great for me working there? Helen Graham.
I remember.
I've got to tell you, that woman made my job so easy. It is fantastic when you have someone that reports to you and you don't even have to worry about them.
We had maybe Mubs. Two meetings in our entire time.
Yeah.
Well, you are not a big fan of meetings.
Who is?
30 seconds into the meeting and you were already fidgeting with something.
But I interrupted you. You were going to say...
Stan, there was this Australian dude, man. He was gay and he was a consultant for Prime Media. I forgot his name now.
Rob Vickers.
Yes, Rob Vickers.
My buddy had training with him. That's why she's such a great newswoman.
Oh, man. Rob Vickers was fantastic. And the chain smoker, Paul Ward.
Now, who was that guy? When you were in charge at Highveld, there was an American accent dude who used to smoke in the studio a lot.
Paul Ward.
Was it him?
That's Paul Ward. Yeah, married an African woman from Brits. Her name was Ansi, and he called her Ants. Yeah. Ansi got to L.A. with Paul Ward and divorced him and moved to New York. And he didn't mind all that. He didn't mind that. What really hurt him was Anne took my cat, Bob. She took my cat, man. So Anne ran away with the pussy. It was incredible.
Bob, radio people used to be superstars, though. There was a time when they were bigger than the Kardashians to average people because they were there. You could connect to them. You heard their stories. They would let you into their world. They would play these sexy songs. You'd feel something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's necessarily something that's easy to achieve in a social media world or in a world of video and audio and blogs and memes and all of that stuff. Do you think that's fair to say?
That's spot on, actually. I think part of the big allure of radio and the attraction of radio is that the listener could make up their minds what you look like. You know, now they see you and they've already, and he's not so hot, but I like his voice and I like his content, you know. So now you have everything else to lean on.
Did you ever have listener sex?
Nah.
Because there were probably a lot of women who were offering on the lines. Some of them you'd meet at events and things.
Nah, that please, for me, Bob, has always been one of those lines you don't want to cross, you know?
One of my former producers used to sleep with listeners regularly.
they're at a disadvantage. I'm a Leo, and I love to hunt. Yes. You know, it's in the hunt. Sometimes, you know, you get bored when you're after a woman, and within 2 seconds the panties fall. You make a U-turn.
No challenge.
Like, no thanks. You know, I'm a hunter. I love to be given a problem. And I'd like to conquer, to know that I used my male whatever, you know, testosterone drive to
guile.
Convince this. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed.
And you, the thrill of the chase is what you're interested
Absolutely.
In. Absolutely. And like a dog who's trying to chase a car, what do you need to do when you catch it? You know, the fun's just about over.
Yeah, it's over. It's over. It's over. Just we on the hubcap.
What do you think the most difficult thing you've had to deal with, not in your career necessarily, but I mean, you say you're approaching 50 from the good side, but this has been an amazing life. You've been to amazing places. You've met phenomenal people. What do you think the most difficult thing for you has been?
It's two things. The first one was when I met my wife, when she was my girlfriend, we had decided, I mean, I had X number of kids. She has one, and she had, you know, like, so we agreed even before we got married that we're not going to have any kids. We didn't want the complication as well that settles in, you know, with her kid and, sure. and my kids as well. And actually, after I had my last kid, I had a vasectomy. And you laugh at this, I'm gonna kill you. A year into our marriage, she got pregnant.
So fertile.
And the
unbelievable.
It was the most difficult thing. What do we do with this?
Did you sue the doctor?
We came very close, very close.
Because you didn't want this to happen.
Yeah, we didn't want this to happen. And making the decision to keep our boy was one of the best decisions of my life. He is fantastic, volatile little man.
But at the time you found out,
it was really hard. You know, it was a very difficult decision to deal with. The second one was leaving Kaya. You know,
was that difficult?
It was. I've got to be honest. The show was on a trajectory. I was having lots of fun. The numbers were looking good. I had a young team. I prefer working with young people. You learn a lot. You know that's how actually I've stayed fresh in this industry. I've never worked with anyone my age. I had a great team. Queenie Roberts is a nutter.
She's mad. You know,
she's like 15 people all rolled up in one.
Yeah.
No, 30. Actually,
And it's totally insane. Unpredictable, right?
Very unpredictable.
She would come in there one morning, yeah. You wouldn't recognize her from the previous day.
Yeah, it was, you know, the first month I actually quit, you know, something that
I
people don't
that.
Know. And it
no,
was.
There was a story about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there was a story, but the media never really gets the story behind the story, you know? And I had to think to myself, well, she's there for the taking. Nothing really challenges you on radio. There it is. And I went back in and I started looking at it differently and we became the best of friends. Really incredible.
So she was forced on you in the beginning?
No, I actually preferred her to other suggestions that were put on the table. I just didn't know what I was going to deal with.
Now you say you become friends, but now that you're not working together, you still communicate regularly?
We have a 180 alumni WhatsApp group.
Oh, very good.
You know, people, most of us are not on Kaya anymore. So we still have conversations. We're still cool. One guy exited the group. I saw you, nigga. So, you know.
It's a very sensitive topic, this exiting
yeah.
of WhatsApp.
Yeah. Well, it was he's still with Kaya. So I think we were...
upsetting his
balance. Yeah, yeah, we were. Yeah,
making it difficult.
Yeah. I kind of understand why he left.
So you're now in this new job. You're busy... grooming talent, you're busy building listenership, you're busy changing programming. Yeah. This satisfies you on some level that very few people get that kind of job satisfaction,
yeah.
right?
Look, it is fantastic. Changing nappies for me, you know, being that psychologist, the mother, the father, and all that kind of... Yeah. I love that the kind of gig. Someone once said to me, I think it's 2 weeks ago, and he says, you know, and I felt honored by that statement. He says, you know, you are like a football coach who's played football. You know, you are the Zizou of radio. And I was like, yeah, that's really where I want to be. But also, you know, working with a radio station like Power 98.7 for me is really, I've never done or programmed or managed a talk station. So I'm like a kid in a candy store, man. This is really fantastic. It's really quite cool. I was listening back to a tape yesterday of one of our presenters. It was such a shitty job that he did. I'm going to have fun talking to him this morning.
So, poor guy. He has no idea what's coming.
It's really fantastic. I mean, also, again, it's such a young team in Houghton. And also putting together these two new radio stations. I'm really having so much fun. And I still wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's still fun.
I can't believe you still wake up at that time. The one thing that I can't wait to stop doing is this waking up stuff.
I love it. I love it.
It's horrible, Bob.
I smoke, Gareth. So for me, being one of the first few people to breathe that fresh air in the morning is fun, especially in winter. I enjoy waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning in winter.
Oh.
With the full moon like it was this morning. Beautiful, man.
Well, when you're ready, come and take over here. I'm done.
This is going to be where I come to in the next 5 years.
Well, you know the door's always open.
Absolutely.
I love you, man. You're such a champion. You really are. And everything you touch turns to gold.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We love having you here.
Thank you. We've been planning to do this for quite some time. And
you're such a busy man. It's hard to peg you down.
Well, someone once said, busy is the opposite of broke. So I'm cool.
All right, everybody. That's Bob Mabena bringing us to a fantastic close on a Friday morning. Cliffcentral.com.